speaker. Our first speaker is Kim. So with that, I give you Kim.
Hi, family. My name is Kim, and I'm an addict. And my clean date is February 1st, 1996. Not that that really matters, because the longer I come around, the more I realize today is all I have. I was asked to share, and I was asked to share at the Just for Today, so I got in a mindset that that's what I was going to share about, and then when I got here, you know, they had other plans, so I was thinking, what can I share about hope? And I was kind of nervous, you know, like the people, my friends in NA were all talking about coming, and I was thinking, I'll be even more nervous if they're here. I don't want them to come. And they're like, we're going to be there in the front row. So that gives me hope that they're all here and that they're, you know, they're loving me like they did since the first day I walked through the doors, broke, busted, and disgusted. My experience is that I grew up in an alcoholic home. I started using drugs in about the ninth grade and just continued from there. I got married really young. Getting high was what me and my husband did back when we were boyfriend and girlfriend, and got pregnant and continued to use, and had two children in active addiction, and ended up in Jessup. I eventually started smoking crack. Actually, I used to love to smoke PCP. I would see people that couldn't touch their ass with both hands, and I would be like, where's it at? I want to be just like you. And I went to buy some PCP, and the strip that I had bought it from in the past had turned into a crack strip, and I really didn't even know what it was. When they showed it to me, I'm like, what is that? Little did I know. And it was kind of interesting because I bought it about an hour and a half away from where I lived, because I worked in the district and I lived in Southern Maryland. And I think that that had to be the only time that I smoked a 20 and didn't go back. And it just progressed from there, you know. It was just too far. In the end, I would have crawled back. I ended up in Jessup for just stupid charges. I got caught once attempting to buy fake crack from an undercover cop. That was interesting, and I got 2 years for that. And then I violated my parole, and I ended up in the A wing of Maryland Prison for Women, and they only have, like, you know, there's only one prison system in Maryland for women, one housing facility. So when you're a parole revokee, you automatically go to maximum security. And I ended up in a cell with a woman who had killed the lady she cleaned her house for. And I can tell you that I have never been so scared in my whole life. I was a little country bumpkin crackhead from St. Mary's County, and I was up there with the big girls, and I can remember sitting on that bed, and I really had to pee, and I almost wet my pants because I was afraid to get up, and it gave me some time, and I started to take a look at my life and what it had become, and the kind of mother that I was to my children, the kind of daughter that I was to my parents. It just gave me some time to think. And I had come to NA meetings, you know, here and there, but never really got involved and made friends and set up a network. And so I guess that was when I had truly had enough. And my hope came, and my strength, when I made it to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I started going to meetings. See, I was getting ready to say I got a sponsor. I didn't do that right away. I started going to meetings, and I was desperate. And the people there just continued to love me. And I had been coming around for about 9 months, and my life was still pretty chaotic. My husband was still using, I was crying at a meeting one night, and I said, you know, I don't have anybody to talk to. I don't have a sponsor. And Dave B. was sitting across from me. He's no longer with us. He died clean several years ago. But he just looked at me, and he said, that's obvious. And it was just the push that I needed to reach out and ask somebody to sponsor me. And I started working the steps. It only took me 7 years to do my fourth step, I'm proud to say. So since then, you know, I got a job. I was able to be a mother to my children. My children are relatively healthy teenagers. And I don't know that they would be if I continue to use. My baby's going to graduate this year. I have a son that's 21. People keep telling me he's going to move out someday, but that gives me some hope. you know, I have a job today. I have responsibilities. I have a life, and I have hope. I'll forever be grateful to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, my life has taken a turn in the last year, and it's been interesting. For probably the first 7 years that I was coming around, you know, my life just continued to get better. It was easy. I could just come, you know, and, a bad day clean is better than a good day using, and, you know, all the things that we say, because I never really had any real tragedies or any really speed bumps in my life. And I hit a couple doing about 55 in the last year. My husband, relapsed. I'm just sitting here thinking, I think I just, exposed his anonymity, but that was not certainly part of my story. You know, in my head that I had, I was just going to live happily ever after with my children and continue in recovery, and life was grand. And I will tell you that, had it not been that I was so plugged in to the program and that I had surrounded myself with friends, I don't know that I would have, you know, worked through that. It was pretty devastating. And I don't know that I really wanted to go to a meeting, but I had nowhere else to go. And I just kept going and let them love me through it. And then 2 months ago, I had my father come to live with me. His health is really failing him. And so that kind of is just something else on my plate. Not the dessert, let me tell you. Nothing like having to give your dad a bath. And you know, it's just been different. It's been tougher. But I still have hope, you know. Life is what it is. I know that as long as I don't pick up, no matter what, I have hope. That's kind of all I have to share. I met John earlier, and he was like, well, that's cool. I'll share. I hope that you got something out of that. And if you didn't, keep coming back. There's lots of meetings all weekend, and I just hope that you guys really have a great time. Thanks.
Thanks, Kim, for sharing. And we have another speaker for you. And with that, I give you John.
My name's John. I'm an addict. John. Thank you, Kim. You were sweet and to the point, and can't nobody ever argue with that. You know, having reflected a little bit about, you know, how to carry this message of having hope drug-free, I try not to stress a lot and think a lot because I really get in trouble when I do that. You know, I thought, well, you know, the best thing to do is really talk about the journey because it's all in the journey, ladies and gentlemen. It's all in the journey. And as sure as there are millions of recovering addicts out here in the world today, there are that many journeys out there. And the person in your chair is going to be your journey. Get on this journey of recovery, and I guarantee you, if you do what we do who are on this journey, you'll get what we get, and that is hope, drug-free, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs, becoming useful, productive members of society, living dreams you never even could dream. That's how good this journey is. It's all in the journey. You know, I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting August 10th, 1982, and so far, that remains my clean date. And that's incredible. They told me yesterday when I checked in that 7,920 days. Today makes 21. For a guy that didn't think much of God or higher power, I got to admit, that's kind of proof right there that when an addict can get this like that, that's all the proof I need for God. And the other proof is I brought two proofs of God here today. I don't own a computer, can't work a computer, don't have email, none of that stuff. But I got an email right here, man. You know? I'd like to think God sent me that email. I think it came by way of my wife, though. I save a lot of money that way, too, by the way. You know, I think a lot of times I've been clean a while, and I think people, newcomers come in the room, they see me, they think he couldn't possibly know what it's like to hurt, be in pain, to be caught up in the grip of active addiction. Well, you know what? I got news for you folks. I'm really far removed from that, and I can't quite remember it like it was yesterday, but however, I can assure you that I was as much pain as anybody I ever met. I come dragging in here as slippery and slimy as anybody I ever met in these rooms. I mean, my God, anybody with any kind of time, we all came through what we call the newcomer period, you know? We all had to start with day one somewhere. You know, my day one, and I believe you get different bottom, different depths. Now, I see a lot of people out here. Some of y'all obviously went down further than others, and which means we got further to go than others. But, you know, we got a thing called hitting bottom. When I hit bottom, I don't know if it was bottom or not. All I know is when the message of recovery is brought to me, I had enough experience to know that it was true and it applied to me. In my particular situation, my thinking prior to getting clean was that, you know what, I got a bad problem with drugs. I don't think I'll ever stop. I'm sure I'm going to die real soon, high or low, but drugs were going to be in my body. And I had accepted that. There was no arguing to myself that, you know what, maybe you ought to ask for help or maybe there's help out there. I never heard of Narcotics Anonymous before in my life until I went to my first meeting. I didn't know to think or look or act. My specific situation, I was in the United States Marine Corps. I was in an infantry battalion. I was a rifleman, a radio operator in the grunts. My job was to go to foreign countries and kill people. And, you know, what a job to have. What a place to be hitting bottom, be angry, miserable, lonely, and a drug problem, knowing you're going to die anytime. I mean, that's what my mind was at the time. There was no hope. My only hope was that I wouldn't do long-term prison time or end up in a foreign jail. I'd been to several foreign jails by this time. You know, Longapo, Philippines, Sasebo, Japan, the brig on ship. I was a deployable Marine, spent many, many, many years out at sea, floating around on these amphibious assault ships. I mean, I knew the difference between Liberty Call and the other call. You know, it wasn't pretty. Anyways, I kept getting in trouble in the Marine Corps, and they sent me to a treatment center on base. Now, on base, you know, we all know a lot about treatment centers. Most of us do anyways. There's many different types. Mine was a squad bay half the size of this room, and we had like 45 Marines in there on racks and walls. Like, it looked like Gomer Pyle, and that was our treatment center. And they did this. They taught us that we had a disease and illness. Now, I'm talking about my journey here now. Here I am one day, I don't care if I live or die, convinced I'm going to die on drugs. The next day, the colonel made me start this journey. I didn't volunteer for this journey, by the way. And here I am, and I'm in this journey. I found out there that I had a disease, fatal, progressive, incurable disease. And my end was going to be jails, institutions, or die from this disease. Or I had really two other options. Go on as best I could. Just be miserable. Amount to nothing. Or do what we do, and you'll get what we get. Here's a group of people that if you get with these folks and do what they do, you'll get what they get. You'll get what they got. Let me tell you what I saw with these folks. These folks, in 1982, you got to have a little imagination, work with me. Anybody been clean that long in Honolulu, Hawaii, or on Oahu, Hawaii, there won't be like two NA meetings a week. So we went to the other program in them days. So I go to these meetings, and the first meeting was an NA meeting. And what's the chance of your first 12-step meeting you ever go to in 1982, given the fact there probably ain't but 1,500 in the whole world, and one of them happens to be right there in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I show up, and the first thing I got to see was a whole lot of people who looked like me, a little different, they had hair, and wore civilian clothes. But set that aside, they were happy. They were smiling. They were hugging one another. They was having fun without the use of drugs. That was my first impression of Narcotics Anonymous. And they were, you know, the girls looked good. They had a car. Some of them had jobs. You know, I had instant attraction. Instant. You know what? I need to listen to these folks. They got what I want here. And you know, this is a simple, simple program. You know, we see stuff we want. If we do what they do, we'll get that. It's as simple as that. So for 42 days, I did my little treatment center thing. I did a first step in treatment, and I found out my first step, and you got to realize I'm doing a first step before we have a step working guidebook, before we have a basic text. Matter of fact, that meeting, all they had was a white booklet. So I'm doing, you know, I'm probably doing what we call the old, you know, generic hybrid step work here. But I realized, and back in those days, they shuffled the wording a lot. You know, just substitute the word alcohol for drugs or alcoholism for addiction. So I'm doing the old substitution word and step work here. But I realized that if I use drugs in any form, it didn't matter what my drug was. If I use drugs in any form, I was going to end up in jails, institutions, or die. Now, I did not have a reservation at the end of the first part of my first step. And I think that's important. A lot of people I see do that first part of the first step, and they still think they can smoke a joint, or they think they can still drink a beer, or they can eat a mushroom or whatever. I'm here to tell you, I heard enough stories from people in them first 42 days that told me that if I do any one of these things in any way, shape, or form, at worst, it's going to lead me back to the ones that really get me in trouble. Or at best, it's going to prevent me from this journey, the spiritual journey that I'm on. So I thought, you know what? I believe these people. I don't know why I believed them, but I just did. They were very convincing. You know, we are a convincing group of people. And the only thing that can prevent us from being convinced is our own disease, and they told me that. They said anything short of convincing, it's your disease talking to you. And I believe that. The disease concept came quick, and it came believable for me. Okay. Now, keep in mind, I did not have the thought of hope drug-free. That wasn't even on my radar screen in 1982. Truth of the matter is, I didn't want to hurt no more. And they told me I didn't have to. And them women looked damn good to me, you know. The only girl I could get up until then, I had to do a financial exchange. And all of a sudden, I have an opportunity to have really get a girl without paying for it. And that was my first and foremost attraction. And I saw it going on. So I'm thinking, all right. And I knew I wasn't going to be in the Marine Corps forever. And I knew I could do a job if it weren't for them damn drugs. Man, I could probably go to work regular, you know, and do something with myself. So, but then that unmanageability piece came easy for me, too. I mean, I see a lot of newcomers thinking they can manage things. I was convinced in treatment that I couldn't manage anything because if I was so manageable, what was I doing in the Marine Corps? You know, that was, I mean, maybe everybody ought to join the Marine Corps to find out how unmanageable you are. But if I was so manageable, what was I in a rehab in the Marine Corps? If I was so manageable, what was I having a bad drug problem in a rehab in the Marine Corps going to meetings? You know, if I was so manageable, why is it that I'm 23 years old and the only thing I owned that I bought was one pair of blue jeans? Everything else the Marine Corps gave me. So unmanageability came clear and simple for me. Now, I feel like, you know, maybe I'm just super blessed or something. I don't know, you know. But I think it's important to know that if you're new or if you sponsor some people, that first step is critical. We can't have a reservation about using, and we have to get in touch with the fact we can't manage our lives. And I mean to tell you, being clean, you know, almost 22 years, my life is probably more unmanageable today than it has ever been. I don't know if I got enough time to get into that, but trust me when I say that. You know, now, the only thing I think I really ever loved or trusted at this point in time was that buzz, that highness, that numbness, that escape from all the pain and misery I had lived my whole life. I mean, I was a painful, painful, miserable person as a newcomer, and I'd been angry and mad and hurt and lonely and pathetic for many years, my whole life. We ain't got time to do my family history, but if I told it to you, you'd all cry, feel sorry for me, probably give me money at the end of the thing. But the pain was great. The only thing I trusted to help me with that pain was using drugs. That's the only thing that could touch it. And when I stopped using, drugs were still working for me. When I stopped using, drugs still worked. It was the consequences of my behavior and actions that weren't working no more. But the drugs were working, so I had a real problem. I knew I couldn't use, and I knew that was the only thing that worked, and I knew I was in trouble. Fortunately, I got a sponsor that said, it's time for step two. And you're a crazy person, John. You are insane. You ain't never been insane. You never been sane in the first place. Once he got to know me and heard my first step, he said, you're kind of lucky because you don't get to be restored to sanity. You get to find sanity the first time in your life. And that made sense to me because I agreed with him. And he said, this is how you find sanity. First thing you got to do is no matter what, if you get the thought of using anything, any type of drug whatsoever, you got to immediately get that thought out of your mind and replace it with a picture of my face telling you this. So anytime I thought I wanted to use, I just put my sponsor's face in my mind telling me this is next. Don't do it. Call me. You go to a meeting. You read whatever you can get your hands on that's recovery related. This is what you do. And if you think you're so powerful, why is it you got to rely on people like me and the fellowship and your treatment center to help break that vicious cycle? Let me demonstrate to you what a power greater than you is. He said, the sergeant major's more powerful than you. He said, he is. The colonel's more powerful. The police are more powerful. The judges. The people in these rooms are more powerful. That's right. They are, because they got a good message that I need, and I can listen to y'all. So that was my beginning of a power greater than me. And being restored to sanity was that my whole way of thinking was wrong, and I had to get a new way of thinking. My brain chemistry, next edition of the basic text or next couple, they might mention brain chemistry, but my brain chemistry was altered. It was not that of a normal human being's. I had the brain chemistry of an addict in active addiction. So I had to change my brain chemistry, my thinking. You know, ways and means had to be changed. I went straight into the third step. And I was one of those guys, when I did my steps, and this is the journey. This is where you get from being a slimy, hurting, no good, dope fiend newcomer to a useful, productive member of society, not even thinking about using drugs no more. Knowing that you've been on a journey for a while, and it's a wonderful, marvelous journey. But this is it. This is the hope drug free. It's all in the journey. Somewhere you cross the line from being what we were to what we are. My third step, 3 months clean, I'm working on my third steps. In 1982, we didn't play. You did your steps. If you were serious. If you want what we had, do what we do. And the steps was the magic, you know. Go to meetings, get a sponsor, get a home group, and work the steps. And by this time, the girls were getting more and more in these rooms. So I was getting more and more motivated. I want to do these steps. I need to do these steps. And, you know, by this time, I'm hugging all kinds of people. I mean, everybody wants to hug me, even though I'm a little bit, they nicknamed me Foul Mouth John. I used to cuss a lot in them days. I don't think I've cussed yet either, by the way. But I can and I do, so don't think I don't and can't, because I can and I do. But that third step, you know what? I hated God. I couldn't stand him. Didn't want to play the game. You know, as a little boy, I shut down on God. Might have been the nuns beating me. Might have been my daddy beating me. I ain't sure. Maybe it was in second grade when I realized I wasn't going to be president of the United States or something. But it was like I didn't want nothing to do with God. I was angry and I was mad. And this one guy I knew in the program who I hated, I couldn't stand. I had a lot of hate as a newcomer. I don't think I have no hate today. I hated this guy. If you knew him, you'd hate him too. Take my word for it. But one night, we were sitting at a coffee shop after a meeting, hitting on the same waitress, hating one another. The waitress didn't want nothing to do with either one of us. And we start talking about God, the third step, because I knew I had to get past this God piece in the third step. And he started to talk to me about how he worked the third step. Now, I'm not one of these people who believes in epiphanies or miracles or none of that, but I'm telling you, this night, in that booth, the glow went over this guy. I mean, you could see the glow and feel the information. And I'm sitting there thinking, whoa, this is weird. You know, I still hate you, but keep talking. You know? And he told me, he said, in the conversation, we got to the conclusion that there is a God, and I'm not it, and that God may or may not be able to do things for me, but God certainly, and then he said, this has got to be the understanding of my God, God of my understanding. Certainly, God's will for me, 3 months clean, can be, number one, don't use nothing no matter what. Number two, go to your meetings. Number three, if you get a chance to help somebody, you help somebody. Number four, consciously think about not hurting anybody. You know, you don't want to go through life hurting people, because I was a very hurtful person, not to mention a killer. You know, I was not a nice guy, especially on drugs. So my beginning of my third step, the God of my understanding, turning, oh yeah, and in my will of my life up until that point, had been finding ways and means to get more, ripping and running, living to use to live, worthlessness, nothingness, you know, the people we turn into. That was my will. So that was easy to turn that pain over, turn it over to something I didn't know, but it got to be better than where I've been. You know how bad we are when we're out there ripping and running? We running up in crack houses, whore houses, shooting galleries, stealing, robbing, hanging around with murderers, cutthroat thieves. They're all our buddies. We take them all home to dinner if we could. You know, that's the way we are. But when we put the drugs down and come into recovery, all of a sudden we're scared to death, try something new and different. It's going to be good for us. I mean, it's the mind, the brain chemistry. It ain't right. We got to change it. And then we change it in the journey, on these steps. It ain't that hard. This way of life is not that difficult. It just isn't. And not only that, it's like awesome. It's incredible, man. I can't tell you how wonderful it's been. And many people in this room have the same experience. I ain't unique or different. My fourth step, I won't love with the idea of writing anything because I can't write. I mean, I can, but I can't. And anything I write, the Marine Corps are going to read. So I have a hard time writing about, you know, Sergeant Major's daughter and stuff like that. But I was a communicator. I knew how to write in code. So I wrote my fourth step in my code. And half of it, I have to admit, this was back before Ebonics was a language, but I'm from Richmond. I know Ebonics, so I was writing all kind of codes and languages and stuff. But the point being, I wrote my four step. I wrote everything down I could ever think of remembering, good, bad, ugly, different, or whatever. And I immediately got with my sponsor. When I was 5 months clean, I did my fifth step. And now here's another weird thing happened to me. When I did my fist up, the 5 months clean, and I was leery of telling all this stuff to my sponsor, so I had purposely selected a sponsor who was smaller than me, one that I'm sure I could manhandle if I had to. And at the same time, he seemed like a nice, honest person. He ain't never done nothing to make me think he was anything other than that. And then I was watching him doing his fist up with him, telling him all this stuff, right? And he never really blinked or batted an eye, maybe asked a question here or there. And, I mean, I'm getting into some real stuff, man. I didn't do chickens and sheep, but it was up in that class. And nothing. He wouldn't blink. So I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is weird. So, I mean, my fist up, I did not leave any stone unturned. Nothing. It all got out there. I couldn't have walked away from that fist up knowing I had something I didn't talk to him about. And it took hours. And when I got done with then, I was 23. I turned 24 by that time. I was 5 months clean. And for the first time in my adult life, probably in 10 years, maybe 15, I had the weight of the world was lifted. I had this stuff came from in here, way down deep, and came through my body and went out into the atmosphere. I could feel it. And I was getting ready to just cry, release it. I mean, I could feel the biggest cry of my life coming, the greatest relief. And about that time, two Marines were walking toward me. So I didn't. I stuffed it. Now, I tell you what, it was 13 years later before I cried. I could have. If I'd have got that release out then, 5 months clean, I might have got all kind of cry healing done. But it took 13 years later before I would have cried again. Long story all in itself. You know, to live drug-free, you got to know where you've been and what you did. The steps are going to tell you that. To have hope, you got to have a vision of where you want to go. We will give you that vision. There is no reason in the world why you have to be an active addict, continue to go down the road of death, degradation, despair, worthlessness. You don't have to go down that road. Too many of us have come before you and have embarked on this thing called the journey, and it is marvelous. My sixth step, character defects, got them, got plenty of them, don't like to deal with them. I do. You know what? You cannot stay clean a long time, work these steps, and not clean up some of your character defects. Granted, we ain't perfect. And the proof that we're not perfect comes in our tenth step. Doesn't say if we were wrong, promptly admit it. It says when we're wrong, as if we're going to be wrong in the future. Yes. We need to constantly look after ourselves, and when we're wrong, we got to make these amends and admit it. You know, my shortcomings, my God, best description I can give for you new folks. You might think, what's the difference between a character defect and a shortcoming? Character defect, you might want to call a flat tire, and a shortcoming might be knowing you got a flat tire, but you're going to drive on it anyways. I did not make that up either. I heard that from somebody else. As is everything I say, I know I heard somewhere. The only thing original about me is the way I insult people, I think. But other than that, you know, I didn't have a problem making my amends list because my sponsor said, make your amends list and don't worry about it. You ain't going to make them anyway. You're going to die before you get to them. I was still in the Marine Corps when I was writing my amends list. We had activity around the world. Wasn't looking good. And I made my amends list, and sure enough, as time came, I started making that list. I went down that list, and I was very fortunate. You know, I am a special one. Not many people, I don't know, a lot of people out there are just like me, you know, but I still say and think I'm special, you know, because I was able to make my amends list for the most part. You know, I couldn't go back on some of the, you know, some of the things, but I made them in ways that was makeable, and me and my sponsor agreed they were makeable. You know, it ain't by accident today I give contributions to charitable organizations. You know, it's just the amends go on forever in my case. And, you know, and I tell you one thing I started doing, one principle I it early in my recovery, and they told me I could do it. This is the one step I could start prior to getting to. My first sponsor told me that. He said, each night when you go to sleep, reflect back on your day. Start the process of doing a daily inventory. And did you hurt anybody? Did you harm anybody? Do you need to make amends for any of your actions? If you do, do it promptly. You know, continue to take that personal inventory. When you're wrong, promptly admit it. I started that early, and to this day I do that. My wife will agree with me on this one. I don't always make those prompt amends, but I should, and I think about it a lot. But my wife sitting out here, hi, honey. Yes, we find wives in Narcotics Anonymous. Sometimes two or three. Depends on how long you keep coming back, I guess. You know, the 11th step for me, you know, it's weird, man. For a guy that don't like God, didn't want God, hated God, didn't want to play the God game, didn't like prayer, didn't like the thought of doing anything but his own particular self-will, arrogant, egotistical self-will, run right ways. You know, 11th step is a big change. All of a sudden, I got to pray and meditate on a regular basis to the God of my understanding, not to hit the lottery or play golf or find a few virgins, but for his will for me, the knowledge of it, and the power to carry it out. What idiot newcomer would want that, you know? So I don't like to really talk about that a whole lot, because newcomers might think, oh, hell, I knew there was a religion here somewhere. But you know what? The God of my understanding is that just on a regular basis, you know, the biggest will for God for me today is it's real clear and simple. Don't use no matter what. Go to the meetings. Try to be a service to people. Try to help other people. Try not to hurt nobody. And have fun. Enjoy life. You know, I put all these things out there for you to have fun with, you know. Do it in moderation. You know, don't play golf twice a day, 6 days a week, and ignore everybody else. You know, don't be fishing day and night. You know, just learn balance in your life, you know, and do it. That's how this thing works. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, I would not stand here and lie to you folks. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps. I am not the person that came through that door on August 10th, 1982. I have embraced the principles of Narcotics Anonymous and have lived the best of my ability by these principles. And there's more than just 24. There are hundreds of them. But they'll all stem from those 24 spiritual principles. It began in my case with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I've had that spiritual awakening. I know the benefit of staying clean, doing what it is I'm supposed to do. And I carry that message, and I practice these principles in all my affairs. If you ride around with me in Richmond, Virginia, on a daily basis, day and night, you will know you're in the presence of a person who practices these principles in all his affairs. You can go to a job site with me, and you will see me hug the superintendent, the owner of the company, the customer. Our conversation won't be how much or when you come in, but oh, I see you got a newcomer with you, because if you're with me, they're going to think you're a newcomer. Anybody knows me knows me. I have no real anonymity at that level, only press, radio, and film. The good news about a newcomer riding with me, don't worry about your anonymity. You're going to have instant credibility if you've seen with me. You're going to have people in society who aren't addicts going to embrace you and love you for wanting to work on yourself and have this illness. I'm a voice in the face of recovery, which is another topic for another workshop. And I carry myself like it because I know my life is so open and free and wonderful and marvelous. I want people to know me, and they do know me. And I carry myself that way. Now, I feel like I'm in a place. I'm in a high place spiritually in my life. And it's a great place. And I want to stay in that place. I know too many people, you know, when I say that's my clean date so far, you know why I say so far? Because ain't no guarantees that's going to stay my clean date. But I want it to stay my clean date. So I want to keep doing what I did as a newcomer. I've done every day since. Because I like my clean date. I'm not sure if being proud of my clean date's the word I should use. But I'm just just, I get silly with my clean date, man. I mean, I love my clean date, man. It is an awesome clean date. This is a great clean date. I do anything to keep that date. I don't want that date to change. My God, my disease is progressive. It's obvious to me that just by not working on some shortcomings often enough and quick enough, they progressively got worse. Imagine my using, you know, when you come in this program, you get clean, you don't, if you go back out, you don't go back out where you left off at. Your disease continued to progress. You go back out where it was going to be, you know, and some. I don't think I can do it. I mean, I think for me to use would be suicide. I believe that. Hope drug free. You know, I got so many days coming now. Using doesn't even enter my mind. It doesn't cross my mind. I go years at a time, and the thought of using isn't in my mind. I might have a second here or there. Some guy was talking last night. Last night, the guy talked about acid, right? Shit, I loved acid, man. That was one of my favorite drugs. For a split second, you know, that thought about just laughing your ass off for 4 or 5 hours, you know, that was attractive, you know. I don't do that now, laugh for 4 or 5 hours. You know, that'd be good. But that's the type of thought that might come to me. I don't chase nothing. You know, I chase life, man. Now, here's another weird thing. You know, when I got home to Richmond out the Marine Corps, and, you know, we only had 3 NA meetings a week in Richmond in 1983 when I got home. And I got to be part of Narcotics Anonymous worldwide explosion. You know, I got to be one of those predecessors, the middle-aged predecessor, not the old guys, but the next generation, you might say. I got to be part of what it was like to go around and grow this program in a city. Go from 3 meetings to 100 meetings a week, man. I mean, I got to be part of that growth, that journey, you know. And I got to tell you, first of all, I get this unique sense of ownership of this program of ours. I know I ain't supposed to think like that. So I get real protective about my home group and some service jobs and positions. You know, the sense of ownership, I know it's wrong. But anyways, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, I've internalized so much my brain chemistry. It's changed. I don't have the same brain chemistry I had 21 years ago. I got recovery brain chemistry. When I want to have fun, I don't go back to a using place in my brain. I go back to a place in recovery, clean, when I need to have fun. Everything I go back to in my brain is a recovery, clean time place. Everything. You know, the wish list, it would take hours for me to get into my what has happened to me, good things since I've been clean, the self-respect, the dignity. The one time I go around my family 1 year, they hide the women and children. You know, fast forward, now when I come to my family, they run up to me, hug me, welcome me. The good jobs I've had, I got married and had a daughter in recovery, got a 12-year-old daughter, 11-year-old daughter that could probably carry this message as well as I can. You know, to grow up in this thing, to have tragedies happen to me. It ain't fun being clean 13 years old, being on top of the world, being a self-made man, having plenty of money, married a woman in the program, have a, you know, a new house, car, job, and have her come home one day and say, I'm out of here, no discussion, and just, you know, blow your brain out. You know, that ain't pretty to go through these things. Thinking of using? Never crossed my mind. Killing her? Daily thought. Wouldn't be here today if it weren't for this fellowship and the people in it. You know, y'all gave me hope when I needed hope. You know, hope to go on. Hope it'll get better. I mean, the days that I went through in so much pain and misery with that why, how, you know, what can I do? You know, it's just, you can't imagine, unless you've been there, how bad that is. And then to give it hope, to give it time, to give it a chance. Keep doing what you're supposed to do. Be that painful, pathetic, hurting person all over again. Keep coming back. Bump into your current wife at the NA convention, you know. Go back through that. You know, then you know why. Hell, this woman needed, there's another woman out there needed help. Now I know why. you know, go through that experience. You know, one of my, I mean, you know, as time goes by, I get my answers. You know, the opportunity is out there, spiritual, mental, physical. They endless and they go on forever, forever. You know, my wife today, who, I mean, you know, years ago, I would have never dreamed that I'd be married to this woman or even be associating with a woman like this. And she got her own business. She works in Washington. She's a lobbyist. She's in the addiction field. She goes all over the country talking to all these people, places, and things addiction related, which, you know, obviously I like. You know, I'm a good tag-along husband. And one of her clients is Betty Ford Center. She's buddies with Jerry and Betty Ford, and she takes me to their board meetings. She don't mind me talking about this, but, you know, I would have never dreamed in a million years. You know, I met President Ford and Betty a couple of times, and then I miss a board meeting, you know, and then I go back. And remember, I'm just a tag-along. I'm just a guy in NA gets a tag-along with his wife. And last time I saw President Ford, like 15 of us in this little room, we walk in, or he walks in, and he walks right up to me, of everybody in the room, sticks his hand out, says, "John, how you been? Good to see you back, man. Where you been?" I would have never dreamed in a million years that a guy like me could have had that experience. Now, that experience, as good as it might sound or be, that is nothing compared to the experience of 12-step and an addict in this program, nurturing and cultivating recovery. Help them on their journey and be at their one-year anniversary when they're picking up that one-year medallion. Now, that, to me, is like almost the ultimate experience in recovery. Service work, cannot put a price on service. That service work, I should be paying y'all to do service work. The benefit from serving, whether in a coffee man, I'm still, my home group, all these years clean. It's a 7 o'clock meeting. 3 to 4 weeks out the month, I'm at that meeting at 6 o'clock. I'm waiting for my coffee maker to show up. If she don't get in 5 minutes, I'm making this coffee myself. And I stay. Many nights, I'm the last one out the parking lot. Many nights. I mean, that's just, you go early, you get that meeting in, you go to the meeting itself, you stay late, you get that meeting afterwards. You cannot miss. If you do this, ladies and gentlemen, if you do this, you will get this, and this will be hope broke free. Man, do not cheat yourself out of that. This program is for anybody who wants it. Want is the key word. If it was those who needed it, well, we do happen to be meeting in the convention center this weekend, but normally our meetings, you notice how they're small, they're in basements and meeting halls, not in coliseums. This is for those who want it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a blessing, a pleasure, and a privilege to be here. I got some of my roadies up from Richmond. Raise your hand, all my boys from Richmond. Yeah. Allison, raise your hand. They want to meet you. We have fun in recovery. Recovery ain't nothing but fun, man. Ain't nothing but fun. All that other crap is crap, man. Recovery is really fun. I'm thank you to the committee. Anybody involved in ever letting me share, because that's the one thing I like to do the most, to share. I mean, I think I do it good, but that's me saying that, you know. I'm always amazed at staying clean, coming back. Always amazed. I'm just so blessed, so privileged to be part of this thing called Narcotics Anonymous, to be in recovery and be on this journey. And, man, this is my journey. And everybody in here, get on your journey and stay on your journey. Don't get up off that journey. Don't use. Go to the meetings. Do what we do, and you'll get what we get. Thank you. God bless everybody out here.